Picture this, you're in a self-driving car, but it's the second wave of tech that actually blows your mind. Why? Because sometimes it pays to watch and learn.
Ooh, I love a good underdog story. Or in this case, under robot.
Exactly, and that's why Nuro's approach as a second mover in the robotaxi space is something to watch closely.
Welcome listeners to Hot Reload. Jamie here, ready to decode the buzzing world of tech with you.
And I'm Alex. We've got a packed episode today. Everything from why Nuro's taking notes in the robotaxi race to how memory is devouring AI chip costs.
Plus, the Texas Attorney General has some strong words for Meta over WhatsApp's encryption claims. And hold on to your keyboards as we talk migrating from Go to Rust.
Let's dive in and kick things off with that memory cost story, shall we?
So, Alex, what's this buzz about developers moving from Go to Rust? Why is it such a hot topic right now?
It's about developers who are reevaluating their back-end systems. Go has been around for a while, but Rust is gaining traction due to its strong correctness guarantees and more control over runtime behavior.
Got it. But Go's already quite solid for back-end services, right? Why switch?
True, Go is solid. However, Rust offers more robust type systems and safety checks. Many people find value in avoiding runtime errors through compile time guarantees that Rust provides.
Interesting. How do these compile time guarantees work exactly?
In Rust, many issues like nil pointers or unhandled errors are handled by the compiler. It forces you to address these potential problems before the code even runs.
Sounds a bit strict. Does that make Rust harder to learn and use compared to Go?
Initially, yes. Many find the learning curve steeper due to concepts like borrow checking, but developers often find it worthwhile, as highlighted by Stephen Bloom from PubNub, who described it as a way to focus on higher level problems once you're past that learning curve.
So Rust enforces this stronger discipline up front. Does this mean it's slower to develop in compared to just using Go?
It can be slower initially, mainly because developers spend more time writing code that meets Rust's strict compile time guarantees. But in the long run, it leads to more reliable software and fewer bugs, especially in concurrency.
And I assume that's a major benefit for teams considering switching.
Absolutely. Plus, the compelling thing is, and this surprised me a lot, Go has captured around 17 to 19% of developers, according to the JetBrains Developer Ecosystem Survey.
Wait, really? That's a pretty significant chunk of the community.
It is. Despite my feelings about the language design, like with error handling and generics, Go has proven its value by capturing such a persistent share.
How does Rust's approach to error handling differ from Go's?
Rust utilizes an option and result type system where you explicitly acknowledge potential errors or absence cases. In contrast, Go relies on runtime and optional linter checks, which aren't enforced by the compiler itself.
So Rust demands you handle potential errors up front, whereas Go gives you more leeway.
Exactly. With Rust, you can't skip checking for none types. For instance, if you try to access an options value without handling none, the code won't compile.
Are there any notable companies making this switch?
Yes, Influx Data moved to Rust for fearless concurrency and better reliability. Paul Dix talked about solving gnarly bugs in earlier versions with this transition.
And what about daily development? How does it affect a team's workflow?
Rust's compile times are longer compared to Go, but for incrementally checking code correctness, Rust's cargo check can expedite development between comprehensive builds.
Right. I imagine efficiency matters if you're deploying changes quickly, but how about libraries does Rust stack up?
Rust's library ecosystem is growing, though it lacks the maturity of Go in certain back-end areas like Kubernetes operators. Yet developers often find Rust's libraries high quality for most tasks.
Overall, sounds like Rust offers more control and safety, but with trade-offs in complexity and learning.
Precisely. Many developers find themselves reaching for Rust when safety and performance are paramount, especially in systems where latency is crucial.
All right, what's next on our tech exploration?
Next, we'll delve into why memory has now grown to occupy nearly two-thirds of AI chip component costs. Stay tuned for that one.
So, Alex, I hear memory costs are ballooning for AI chips. What's going on there?
Yeah, memory's really taking center stage. High bandwidth memory, or HBM, has jumped from 52% to 63% of AI chip component costs in just under 2 years.
Wow, that's more than half. Why is this happening now?
It's partly due to demand surges for more powerful AI systems. They require more, faster memory, pushing costs up globally.
Is it just memory seeing these increases, or are other components involved too?
Good question. While memory costs have shot up, logic dies stay stable around 13%, and packaging has declined from 19% to 15%. Auxiliary components fell from 15% to 9%.
So the focus is really shifting toward memory. But what's the financial impact here?
It's massive. HBM spending soared from $12 billion in 2024 to $32 billion in 2025. That's an astronomical rise compared to any other component.
Wait, did you say $32 billion? That's a significant jump.
Absolutely. And what's key here is that this trend is set to continue into 2026, with higher memory costs already considered in CapEx guidance from big players like Microsoft and Meta.
Sounds like companies are bracing for this. How does it compare to their overall spending?
Microsoft, for instance, forecasts a $190 billion CapEx for FY 2026, with about $25 billion earmarked for rising component prices, including memory.
These are huge numbers. Why is this so crucial for AI chips specifically?
AI tasks are increasingly intricate, needing rapid data retrieval and processing. HBM supplies the bandwidth crucial for these demands, hence its large expenditure.
And who are the main players driving this trend?
The big four, NVIDIA, AMD, Google, and Amazon, are heavily investing in HBM, directing the industry's course.
With these soaring costs, is there any strategy to manage them better?
Companies are trying by optimizing architectures and securing long-term supply contracts. But with tight memory supply and strong demand, prices remain high.
So how does this situation compare to what other tech players like Intel are doing?
Intel's opting for a different route, focusing more on advanced logic and diverse node processes. But overall, memory remains a major industry challenge.
HBM is quite the star in AI chips now, isn't it?
Yep, essential for meeting the demands of powerful AI applications.
All right, so what's coming up next?
Next, we're diving into Nuro's unique strategy in the robo-taxi market and why they think being a second mover gives them an edge.
So Nuro believes being the second mover in the robo-taxi space could actually be an edge over giants like Waymo. But how does that work exactly?
Right, it sounds counterintuitive, but their strategy is rooted in learning from Waymo's challenges. Waymo's a big name, no doubt about it, operating over 3,000 driverless cars in more than 10 cities. But Nuro sees their position as an opportunity, not a setback.
Interesting. What lessons are Nuro hoping to leverage from being in that second position?
One key point is that Nuro gets to watch and learn from Waymo's experiences, both their successes and their failures. As Dave Ferguson, Nuro's co-CEO, said, they're using Waymo's stumbles to reassess and make sure they're not making the same mistakes when they launch.
That's like having a free playbook of do's and don'ts, right?
Exactly. And Nuro's timing aligns with pivots in their business. They initially focused on delivery robots but shifted to robot axes in 2024. This gave them a fresh perspective and partnerships, like their big agreement with Uber and Lucid.
Oh, are they working with Uber and Lucid? I hadn't realized they were teaming up.
Yes, that collaboration is crucial. Nuro develops the tech, Lucid equips their SUVs with it directly at the manufacturing stage, and Uber, owning the fleet, will operate the service. This trio creates a unique partnership.
That sounds like a powerful combination. Does it also mean there's heavy investment behind them?
Exactly. Here's the stat that blew my mind. Nuro struck a deal to deploy tens of thousands of robot axes across the US, and in doing so, secured hundreds of millions of dollars from Uber.
Wait, seriously, that's a massive investment. It definitely gives them some serious traction.
Absolutely. Nuro plans to launch in San Francisco soon, and their approach isn't just incremental. They're aiming for a broad, useful service right from the start.
But what about the trust issue? Aren't people still wary about getting into a driverless car?
Very much so. Nuro acknowledges that public trust is a hurdle. Ferguson mentioned they plan to be transparent with statistics, hoping to reassure the public about the safety and performance of their robot taxis.
How are they handling remote assistance for these cars? There's been some skepticism around that too.
Ferguson clarified that remote assistance isn't about remote controlling cars. It's more about guiding the vehicles when they hit uncommon situations, keeping them safe rather than steering them remotely like in a video game.
Makes sense. So overall, they're looking to learn and implement quickly by watching others, but how do they project themselves in the long run?
Nuro's targeting versatility and autonomous driving tech, not just for robot taxis, but also for licensing their system to other companies. They want their AI to handle everything from deliveries to autonomous personal vehicles.
Seems like a solid game plan. And speaking of stepping up, our next story tackles a company that might be stepping back. We're jumping to Texas, where the AG is taking on Meta over WhatsApp's encryption standards.
Here's one for anyone who's ever sent a message hoping it's private. The Texas Attorney General is suing Meta, claiming that WhatsApp doesn't provide the end-to-end encryption it promises.
Wait, aren't they supposed to be super secure? Why does this lawsuit matter so much right now?
Well, it's a huge deal because a lot of people rely on WhatsApp believing their chats are totally private. If that's not true, it could mean millions are exposed without knowing it.
Okay, that's huge. But what's the AG actually claiming against Meta here?
The lawsuit argues that Meta's statements about encryption might mislead users. Allegedly, the end-to-end promises aren't fully upheld, potentially leaving messages vulnerable.
Hold on, how does end-to-end encryption actually work? What are they suggesting isn't happening?
In simple terms, end-to-end encryption means only the communicating users can read the messages. It's like sending a sealed letter directly to the recipient. The claim is maybe that seal isn't as tight as promised.
So does this mean someone other than the intended recipient can access the messages?
That's what the lawsuit suggests. And if that's the case, there's a risk that third parties, maybe even Meta themselves, could intercept and read those supposedly private messages.
Yikes. What's Meta saying in its defense? Can they actually prove the encryption isn't working?
Meta's rebuttal is that they take user privacy extremely seriously and firmly state that WhatsApp messages are indeed end-to-end encrypted. They claim the lawsuit is misinformed.
And how does this stack up against other popular messaging apps? Do they promise similar encryption features?
Yes, apps like Signal and iMessage also tout end-to-end encryption. However, Signal's open source nature often earns it a bit more trust for transparency. WhatsApp doesn't have that same level of openness.
Right, so transparency is key here. But how could this lawsuit impact users and Meta going forward?
If Texas wins, Meta might have to change how they market and possibly implement encryption. It could prompt a deeper investigation into not just WhatsApp, but other apps' privacy claims too.
Are there any potential consequences for users if this lawsuit goes forward?
Users might become more skeptical about who truly protects their data. It could spur a shift to more transparent platforms or pressurize the big players to tighten their privacy technologies.
So it's like a wake-up call for both companies and users.
Exactly. It's a reminder to take claims of privacy with a pinch of caution until they're proven beyond doubt.
I guess the moral of the story is, don't just read the label. Make sure you understand what's really going on behind it.
Absolutely. And speaking of understanding what's really going on, rumor has it the tech world might be seeing another big clash soon, this time between two headphone titans.
You know, Alex, that lawsuit against Meta really got me thinking. I mean, we're all just walking around assuming our WhatsApp chats are locked down tight.
Right, it's a good reminder how much we rely on trust in tech until someone calls it into question.
And how about those soaring memory costs for AI chips? Talk about sticker shock, over half the price of the whole chip.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Developers need to brace for these costs when building out AI solutions. It's not just tech, but economics at play.
And Nuro being a second mover, I love that strategy, letting others slip so you can nail it on your turn.
Bold move, risking no first mover advantage. But sometimes second's really first place if you play it well.
So today we explored why developers are shifting from Go to Rust.
And how nearly two-thirds of AI chip costs are tied up in memory alone.
We also delved into Nuro's second mover confidence in the robotaxi market.
Plus the Texas AG's lawsuit against Meta over WhatsApp's encryption promises.
Thanks for joining us on Hot Reload. Make sure to subscribe, drop a review, and tell a friend about us.
Absolutely. Share the love. Leave us your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.
Until then, have a great week, everyone.